Empire. Hello and welcome to a Packed Draft podcast. Today, I have Randy Mueller, former NFL general manager with several teams, and I asked him what would he definitely do with the second pick if he were the Redskins, and his memories of working in San Diego with Redskins coach Ron Rivera. He also knows Kyle Smith. Hint, his comments are good. Then it's on to Tyler Roman, an NFL scout who also does mock drafts for NBC Sports Washington. We go over a lot of mid-round picks, tight ends, receivers, linemen, and backs, guys who can help the Redskins in the third or fourth round. And then finally, it's on to ESPN's Cameron Wolf, my guy covering the Dolphins in Miami. Has Miami gone from tanking for Tua to trading for Tua? He provides the answer. Don't forget, you can read my work on ESPN.com. This coming week, I'll have a look at what the Redskins can still do to surround Dwayne Haskins with more talent from this draft. Before I get to Randy Mueller, first want to thank you for your patience. I know the audio isn't always the highest quality that you can get when you're in a studio, but this is an unusual time. Bear with us, focus on the content. I think you'll still enjoy it. I also wanted to mention a few nuggets on here before moving on. Number one, in regards to Trent Williams, it's business as usual. There haven't been the offers they need to get it done, and they are willing to trade him after the draft. I talked to someone a week ago, and the feeling is they'll be just as happy adding picks in next year's draft as well as this year's. Whatever it goes, if they get it for 2021, they're going to be just okay. They are taking a little risk here, but the offers they've had thus far just aren't good enough, and they're willing to wait to see if they improve, whether after the draft or maybe even in August. I know Minnesota is one of the teams definitely interested, and I think they probably remain the team to watch. Whether they get him or not, I don't know. I'll also be curious to see what San Francisco does if Joe Staley ends up retiring. But I do know the Redskins are willing to ride it out and will not do another team any favors by giving him away. In the end, it might cost them a little bit, but it's also a move or a strategy that could pay off in a higher pick, ultimately. Number two, for the record, I don't think the Skins trade the number two pick, and I do believe, well, they will draft Chase Young if they're at number two. I have thought that since January, and nothing has changed my mind. They know he's a high-impact guy and can affect all three levels. I know this to be true in terms of their thinking. I talked to one person in the league who thinks they definitely won't trade the second pick no matter what. And I kind of lean in that direction, but you always have to leave out just in case they get that massive haul. And I think that's the phrase that I've been using the entire time, and nothing has changed. I do know it will take a lot just to get them to consider moving because they know what they're passing up. Number three, I know everyone seems to want more picks. The Redskins are a young team already. I had a story last week on the likelihood or how all signs point to Chase Young. You can go back and check that out on ESPN.com. One of the nuggets I had in there is 54 of their 74 players are currently 26 years old or younger, and a majority of them will start. I get the sense that they will try to add more picks, or they'd like to, I should say, maybe in the third or fourth round if possible. That could be tough. What they don't want to do is deplete the capital for next year. Because of this unprecedented offseason, it could be that the full rebuild doesn't begin until 2021 after the coaching staff has really gotten to know their players. But that's why the goal now is to add someone like Young who can become elite. It's never been just to add more picks. And by the way, when I say the full rebuild, they clearly have done a lot of that stuff, and there's stuff that's going on. I just think that because of this offseason, it could maybe wait, you know, they may have to wait on some guys and in some strategies to execute that in full again next year. But again, it's never been just to add more picks in this draft. You get better by drafting excellent players, not by drafting for volume. And I understand that this could end up with two first-round picks versus just having a lot of picks. That's a difference, and I understand that. But I will point to, in 2011, the Redskins had 11 draft picks. The best player out of that draft was Ryan Kerrigan for the Redskins. A very good pick. But the other 10, Niles Paul was probably the best player. I love Niles. Very good backup tight end, Special teamer, good guy to have on the roster, really good guy to have on the roster. But the point of this is those were the top picks. Quantity does not top quality. And again, I say that knowing that there's a difference between having 11 picks and then maybe three or four in the top three rounds. Anyway, now here's my conversation with former NFL GM Randy Mueller. One note to add here. During the conversation, I asked him about the Wonderlic scores because it was reported that Tua Tagovailoa scored a 13. It later came out that it was actually a 19. The conversation we had still applies, but I wanted you to have the accurate score. Now I'm joined by Randy Mueller, longtime NFL executive, general manager of the Saints, the Dolphins, senior executive of football ops and with the Chargers. It's been a long time in the NFL. Randy, thank you very much for joining me. The first thing I want to ask you about, though, is you do have experience with Ron Rivera when he was an assistant coach with the Chargers. And we've gone over a lot about Rivera with the Redskins, but I am curious what you saw in him at that time as a young assistant coach. That was before he became a head coach with Carolina.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You make me feel old with that introduction, John. I don't know, man. Ron and I do go way back. I remember him as a player, one of the probably few guys that did a little evaluation on him coming out. But you're right, we crossed paths in San Diego for several years, I guess. I think the first time I spent time around Ron in a professional setting, you could tell he had the it factor to be a leader. You know, he's a leader of men. He's very obviously organized. He understands what his job is, but he's just one of those guys that people want to get in line behind. So nothing but the best for him. Happy for him. Happy for Kyle Smith as well. Kyle Smith's father and I worked together, obviously, with the Chargers. AJ hired me there, so go way back with AJ as well. So they've got a good group there, a lot of good scouts, a lot of good people involved. So I'm positive they're going to get it right for Dan Snyder, who I've also known for years.
And I was going to ask you about Kyle, too, because I knew you would work for AJ. But with Ron, when you say you could see it, what were some of the things that you remember seeing maybe that told you that?
Well, I'll tell you what. I remember conversations that Ron and I had. And I had just come from Miami. So when I left Miami, San Diego hired me like the next week. So I remember being there for a mini camp right after the draft. And then from then on, and I remember standing on the sidelines with Ron, and he was asking me at the time, hey, what do I need to do to prepare for this opportunity? He had been interviewed, I think, several times before then, but he said, I need to help some help on cap stuff. I need some help on personnel stuff. I need some help on working together with a GM and personnel crew. So he was always inquisitive. He had been around for a while at that point. So the fact that he was still wanting to learn and understand different angles of the job itself was very impressive to me. So I think from that time on, I knew it was just a matter of time before someone gave him an opportunity.
And you know the importance of the coach and the front office working together well. And you brought up AJ and Kyle's son, or his son Kyle is here. And it does seem like he and Ron get along pretty well. What difference does that make when you have that sort of chemistry or synchronicity or whatever?
Yeah, I just went through a little example of that in the XFL where when you're in the business and your job is to do what I do or do what a coach does, there is nothing more important than building it together. Two heads are better than one. You always hear people talk about that. But in the XFL, we built a team from scratch. And in my case, totally aligned philosophically, football-wise, with June Jones. It was unbelievable in that out of all my years in the NFL, I might remember this XFL experience as much as any down the road because of that, because we were able to work together as good as any setup I've ever been in. And you built something from scratch. Now, they won't have quite that that wide path in the NFL because when you do this at the NFL level, you make do with what is there. But at the same time, they're going to go forward and have a chance to, if they can be on the same page, they can have – the rules are set up where they can get good in a hurry. And if the two of them can realize that relationship, it is a respectful one. Both of them have a different angle. Both of them do things and think differently, but yet come together at the end of the day. They have a chance to get better because of the way the setups are nowadays with regard to free agency, the draft. There's just a ways to make your teams better.
Did you have much dealings with Kyle when he was, I know that he wasn't working there, but did you have much dealings with him before?
No, very little. I mean, I would see Kyle on the road a lot, still did up all through my time with San Diego, but obviously AJ hired me and AJ and I go way back. So I've known about Kyle. And in fact, Kyle has a couple scouts working for him now that I've had a chance to work with in the past as well. So there's a lot of commonalities, that's for sure.
What do you know about those scouts? What can you share about those scouts that, like, you know, your scouting report on the scouts?
Yeah, no, that's a big thing. Half the job of a decision maker is to listen and know your scouts, know where the information is coming from. Same when you listen to your coaches. You've got to become a great listener, and I'm sure Kyle's figuring that out now. You need to have a couple people to lean on, but you need to be a good listener and take it with what these experienced guys come together and bring you. Paul Scanzi is an example who was with me in San Diego. He's known Kyle forever. AJ had hired Paul as well. So I know Paul's a really good scout. He's a very conscientious, good man. Hopefully Kyle and Ron, from that standpoint, both listen to guys like Paul Scanzi.
It does seem, Randy, like one of the things they're doing here is that there does seem to be a lot of cohesion again and working together and listening to guys and then coming up with their own, you know, I guess they're coming to a consensus, so to speak. That's right. Not always easy. No. You know, so, and you can tell like, just by your reaction, why can that be so hard?
I don't know. And it's crazy because I've had jobs, John, where I've worked under a coach, I've worked even with a coach, and I've been the coach's boss. And I always still worked under that premise. So consensus is what it's all about. I think the process of team building is all about consensus. Right. And the fact is, I don't have to be right. The coach doesn't have to be right. Most times, the truth is in the middle somewhere. So right. These philosophies have been true and tried for me in my 30-some years in the league. I don't know why teams can't get that part of it right, but it seems pretty simple to me. I think sometimes egos are involved. Sometimes there's agendas of other people in the building involved, and that's never a good thing. But if the coach and the GM and the personnel group can be on the same page with, hey, we first you need to identify what you're looking for, and the coaches need to help you do that because right. They know what positions and schemes they're going to use. But once that's been developed, it's easy to find the right players, and I think to be on the same page.
And Randy, I'll be honest, that's to me, when people talk about, like, you get these, a lot of fans are like, oh, they didn't do enough in free agency. I'm like, the biggest thing they've done this offseason were some of those hires, but I said, the fact that those guys get along so well, I think is going to pay bigger dividends than any free agent that they would have brought in. Now, along with that, we have the draft coming up. They're sitting there at number two, and there's a lot of talk about what, you know, I think they're going to take Chase Young. I think most people think that. But the decision is, do you trade back? So I want you to have, if you have the number two pick in this draft, what would it take to get you out of that pick, knowing what you may get in Chase Young?
Well, in one word, a lot. I think that, and it's great for fans to talk about. It's great for fantasy football people to kind of what if. Here's the thing. If Chase Young, and I think he is as good as everybody says he is, why would you back out of that spot for a lesser player? Right. Now, maybe it's a lesser player and something else or a couple different other holes to fill, but I'm into getting the best players we can, and that'd be hard for me to back out of that spot. I don't think they're in a position where they can pass on an elite pass rusher. Other than a quarterback, that's probably the second most valuable position you can add to your team. I think it's hard for them to back out of that, and frankly, I don't think I could be talked out of picking Chase Young at that spot.
Yeah, and I would have a hard time with that, too. To me, it would take a couple first-round picks this year, maybe a third, and maybe a future one even to get me to really think hard about it because of what he can offer. And it's funny because they do have a lot of young players, but they don't have our elite players, potential elite players, right. And that seems to be what he can give. And you watch what the Bosa brothers have done, but especially up in San Francisco, that, you know, the impact is pretty big, you know, and I don't know – why you would go away. I know why you would, but I don't anticipate them going away from you.
Yeah, I just think you're right. Elite players are hard to get. And yeah, you want quality all the time. But in this case, a top three pick is staring you right in the face. I mean, that'd be hard for me to back out of there to take anything else. And you mentioned a bundle of picks. again, those are still what ifs.
Right.
You don't know what you're going to get with those picks. You don't even know if you went from 3 to 10, what would be available.
Right.
So I guarantee you won't get the quality of Chase Young at 10 that you get at 2. So it just, there's a lot of parts of it doesn't make sense to me. And I understand they need to take all the calls. They need to discuss it ad nauseum. And that's all part of the fun of building a team and the process of it itself. But at the end of the day, it'd be hard for me to back out of there.
What if you're sitting there at 5 and you're Miami? Would you be, knowing what you know, let's say, for example, it's Tua. They want Tua. Knowing the medical and all that, would you be comfortable giving up a lot to go from 5 to 2?
If you were comfortable with the medical part, I think that will be the thing that, in the end, keeps people from trading up for a guy like Tua. One, you're really setting yourself up for not only a little bit of criticism with regard to trading up, but trading up for a guy with the medical history he has. It's kind of twofold. It's almost 2 strikes against you. And that's not to say he might be a great player. I don't know. But the medical part of that seems to be irresponsible if you just turn your back to that.
What do you think of Tua? And I guess the Tua, Justin Herbert, there's questions. Some people who now are saying that maybe the Dolphins like Herbert more. Have you had a chance to watch those guys a lot?
I have watched them both, actually. And I think there's pros and cons to both of them. I clearly would see Joe Burrow as the head and tails above him. I've heard that discussion around, and I don't think that's much of a discussion. The things that you love about Tua are the things that are obvious to everybody. His short release, his quick feet, his definitive decision-making on third downs, and the short to medium range accuracy. The accuracy wanes a little bit when talking about throwing downfield. And again, that can come with the scheme that he's in as well, but there may be some issues there. And then just because Drew Brees is 6 foot tall and the kid in Seattle is 6 foot tall, you can't disregard the fact that Tua is not a guy. So right. The pocket does have to be maneuvered. It does have to be moved around a little bit for him. He does get a ball batted down here or there, and I know tall guys do too. But it's not a slam dunk. This guy's the next coming of just because he's a lefty of Steve Young. I don't see that value there. And then Herbert has every measurable you want. He's big. He's athletic. He's got a good arm. He can make most of the throws. The scheme he played at Oregon is for the pro game, not the easiest to convert to. There are some throws that he will miss. He missed some open guys. I don't think he has the same accuracy as Tua has. But, again, it depends on your scheme. If you're going to sit him in the pocket at 6'5", his vision and his ability to make all the throws downfield might be a little better than Tua's. So I guess that's why they have Baskin-Robbins has 31 flavors, John.
That's right.
Everybody likes a different kind, you know?
Going back to Chase Young, when you watched him, what stood out to you?
Well, the suddenness of his get-off, for one thing. That's something you can't coach. You can't coach his body control and his natural lean around the corner. Those are things that are rare in this game. They have been since I got in it. I know that those guys are just hard to find. Not that a quarterback isn't, but I think this guy's skill set as a pass rusher, he's a clear fit with almost any scheme defensively. I think that puts him at a different level. And he can affect the game on every snap.
Right.
And he does that a lot of times. So a lot of pluses, hardly anything at all to nitpick about him. I think he's pretty complete.
Does he remind you of anybody?
A little bit of Derek Thomas.
Okay.
You know, I grew up in the Seahawks organization, yeah. So we had to flock Derek Thomas in Kansas City forever. A little bit of that. It's just a natural lean where he can turn the corner and squeeze a pocket and force a quarterback to know where he's at on every snap, both pre-snap and post-snap. You got to be aware of Chase Young, and that's a hard skill set and a hard weapon to find in this day and age.
I got just a couple more for you, but one of the things I wanted to – you went through that lockout in 2011, and this is an unbelievably different, unprecedented offseason. These guys have a young quarterback and a new coach. How would you go about trying to develop Dwayne Haskins in this offense? Can't get him on the field maybe until August.
Well, it's going to be hard. There's no doubt. It sets him back. It sets everybody for developing players back in this day and age. And I know we've got this virtual offseason now that's in place, but I'll be honest, I don't know how much we're going to get out of that.
Right.
If you have a virtual reality system within your organization, and there are some good ones out there, obviously that's going to matter, but it definitely sets back the quarterback position, because that's one that you need to have hands on all day, every day. I've said for years, ever since the NFLPA and the league has cut back their off seasons, the development of quarterbacks has been really hard. And it's even more so this year. These kids are going to struggle. It probably gives the advantage to a veteran guy that knows the system, that the Redskins acquired from Carolina, probably gives him a heads up for sure as to knowing what's going on sooner rather than later.
With Dwayne, what was your, did you get a chance to watch him a lot last year? And what was your take maybe on him coming out of college?
You know, I really didn't. He was one guy I didn't spend a lot of time viewing. I saw a little bit of what everybody else saw last year in the system, a young guy who makes a lot of mistakes. The game happens awful fast for him, which are all normal. I mean, that happened that way for Peyton Manning, John Elway.
Right.
So, you know, the best thing about a rookie quarterback is, in my opinion, when you can say it's year two. So they do have that going for him. But you wish he could learn in a more reasonable and a more normal fashion. But that's the life and times we're in.
But it's funny because I also look at him as he went into a situation last year where not everybody there was on board with drafting him at 15. Then you go from that kind of year to having an unprecedented offseason where you may not be able to work with your new coaches. That's not the easiest start for a young quarterback, is it?
No, it's a nightmare. I'll be honest with you. It's a nightmare. It's really hard for him. It's up there with the, the kid that Arizona drafted that went to Miami, Josh Rosen. It's up there with his career. You know, how unlucky could a guy be where he gets traded in year two? You know, all the changes that happened in Miami, we're tanking for Tua, all this other garbage. It's hard for these guys. And again, it's going to set them back. There's no question. I think it's going to set these kids back 2 or 3 years before, and this may not even be the end of it. Who knows when we're going to get to play.
Right. And that's the thing, is that's what I'm curious about too, because for a young player, and especially an inexperienced young player, you didn't have a lot of starts in college. You only had 7 last year. So it just makes it a lot tougher. But, you know, I know he's doing what he can to learn it, but it does make it it's another obstacle for him. Last things I want to ask about too, you were involved in the XFL. And I'm just in a couple spring leagues. So do you think that we'll ever be able to see a spring league take hold? Or was the XFL demise this year more about the virus versus the league?
I think without a doubt it was virus-based, the demise of it. I think it took a once-in-a-lifetime virus to shut them down. The other ventures that we've had in, whether spring leagues or off-season leagues, NFL Europe, all of that stuff, those were great tools for us to develop players. So to answer your question, yes, I think there's a market for it. I think both the AAF and the XFL proved that people want to watch it.
Yeah.
They proved that the product is good. TV wants content, so there's a marriage there. I think the one thing that could solidify is if they could make an agreement with the NFL as a developmental league. I saw something on TV this morning. The NBA now has got a pathway to professionalism.
Right.
Some new fangled program where kids can come out early and then go to this G League to develop.
Right.
If the XFL and the NFL could ever get together on something like that, that would be awesome. I think everybody wins. The kids win. There's a bunch of kids that just want the opportunity. Maybe even to leave college early. Maybe it's a one-year program where after a third year or after a second year in college, a kid can do that. I just think there's something there to talk about, and the good of the game would benefit from it. And that's from a macro picture. There's a place in the football environment for a spring league like the XFL, especially if the NFL can use it as to develop players.
When you were looking at quarterbacks, did you look at the Wunderlich score much? I mean, how important was that?
I think it's very important. I think you have to find every angle to figure out if a kid can process information. And let's face it, the Wunderlich score itself maybe doesn't tell you how smart a guy is, but it definitely tells you how he can process information. And any way you can find out how these kids process, that's probably the fatal flaw in NFL quarterbacks now that come from college to the pros. If they can't process, it's going to be a struggle. So you need to use every angle you can to do that.
Because I ask you that because Tua came out today and it was pretty low, and it surprised me. I think it surprised a lot of people. And when you watch him, it doesn't seem like it maybe that, I don't know if it jives or not. When you watch his game, does it look like he has trouble processing on the field?
It didn't to me. And again, yeah, I don't know what I didn't see the number, so I don't know what it was.
It was like 13.
Yeah, that's not very good. That's for sure.
But when you watch him, it doesn't seem like that's how he plays.
No, I would agree with that. I did not see him make a ton of mistakes. There was a couple red zone interceptions, but that's normal. Again, you would probably really drill down on the system that they run at Alabama and have to visit with those people to find out what they were asking of him. Right. But I saw a lot of decisiveness in his game, and especially going to a second or third option and then delivering the ball again on the short to medium range stuff. He was really good at that. So that number really would surprise me.
Last thing, I promise, is there a guy in this draft that you are like excited to see what happens to him once he gets to the league? Is there somebody that, you know, besides some of the obvious ones, is there anybody that you really like here that?
I'm a little interested to see where Jacob Eason falls, the Washington quarterback. Having, you know, living in Seattle, I've kind of seen him. He's a Seattle kid, so I saw him as he went through his recruiting. He goes to Georgia, gets really run out of Georgia, and I'm not sure he's not a longer-term answer better than what they ended up with. But then he goes to Washington. They have kind of an off year. Again, development of his skill set is one thing, but can he process, can he find the right NFL system? Because there's another kid that's 6'5", 6'6", can make all the throws, really good arm. You know, I'm anxious to see how his, one, where he ends up, and two, where he ends up going once he gets there. That would be a really intriguing one for me. Someone might end up with an NFL starting quarterback there.
Excellent. Randy, I appreciate your time. You've been very generous, and thank you for your insight. Thank you for joining me.
You bet, John. Thank you.
After this break, I'll be back with Tyler Roman to discuss players that he sees as good fits for the Redskins in the third and fourth rounds. Welcome back. Now, here's my conversation with Tyler Roman.
As you'll recall, Tyler has been on with me a couple times in the past to talk about the draft. And I want to get, this is a draft heavy show, so I want to get right into it. And Tyler, thanks for joining me. And I want to jump into it right away. Let's see if the Redskins trade with Miami. They get the 5th and the 18th pick. What do you think would be a best case scenario for them at those picks?
I think best case scenario would be Isaiah Simmons or Jeff Okuda at 5. I think Isaiah Simmons might be a little, you know, much of a pipe dream if the Giants are locked in at him at this moment. But if you get him, that'd be great. He can play safety linebacker. He excels at single high. I've seen him in the slot. He's covered outside receivers. He could do it all, very much like a Derwin James type. But yeah, I think more realistically, you got a guy like Jeff Okuda from Ohio State who, you know, would be a great addition to the secondary. This team needs corners. Kendall Fuller was a good pickup in free agency, but, you know, getting a guy like Jeff Okuda, I think he's going to be a number one shutdown corner, very much along the lines of his Ohio State brothers of Denzel Ward and Marshawn Lattimore. You know, I think you could pick him at 5 and feel good about him being your number one corner here for the next 5 years or so. So I think that would be, you know, the ideal situation at 5. And at 18, you know, the team needs wins. It was indicative of the team going after so hard at Amari Cooper in free agency. They really want to surround Haskins with the mesh weapons as possible. So I think, you know, ideally you'd love a guy like guys like Jerry Jeudy from Alabama, whose route running is just next level, or CeeDee Lamb, who's just a fiend after the catch when you get him the ball, or Henry Ruggs, who has speed for days. You saw anticipation of him in his 40 time at the combine. So those would be the guys you want at 18. Not for sure one of those guys slides, but a guy I think feel pretty confident he would be there is Justin Jefferson, the receiver from LSU. Really like his versatility. He can play the slot, X, Y position, Z, all of them. He excels mainly in the slot, but he can win outside too. He had a great combine, which I think solidified his first-round status. But, you know, I really think Justin Jefferson would be a good 18. If they want to go tackle route, you got a guy like Josh Jones from Houston, who's a mammoth of a prospect at 6'7". He excels the pass game, a little raw, but he's an experienced player. Started the last 3 years at Houston.
And when you look at, like, let's go to the 5th pick if it's Simmons or Okuda, but with Simmons, how do you see him? Do you see, I mean, you kind of brought it up earlier, but like, do you see him as, I mean, more teams I'm talking to seem to see him as a safety. And I know there were some teams that weren't sure what do you do with him. And that kind of clouded their, maybe what they, how much they really liked him because they weren't sure where is he best.
Yeah, but I think he's just a football player. Like you could put him out there, one of those 11, and he's just going to compete and be one of your best players. I think I like him at safety, but if you put him, you know, at linebacker in a 4-3, he'll excel there too. I mean, he literally can do a little bit of everything, and I think that's why teams should cover him. You know, you don't get that much versatility, you know, these type of days. And a guy like that, like I said, very reminiscent of a guy like Derwin James. They play a little bit everywhere. They play him in the box. They play him up high. And he, you see how much of an impactful player he's been for LA. So I think, you know, I think Isaiah, I don't see why people would be, you know, upset of where to play him. I just think you put him out there and he's going to make plays for you. And I think he'd be a great pick for the team. And, you know, I guess there was reports earlier they really liked him and even it too, but I think that might be some smoke. I think Chase was a guy that would prefer, but who knows?
Right. And I think the question here then becomes, what's the better value, Chase Young at 2 or the combination of a Simmons, Okuda, or and maybe a Justin Jefferson or Jones or whatever? How does that combination stack up to Chase Young?
Yeah, like I said, I think I've been going back and forth on this as well. I think Chase Young is, you know, absolute beast. You know, I don't think we can say too much as already hasn't been said. I think that we got to stop using the generational pass rusher with him, though, because people keep saying that, but then you had
Nick every Bosa year you hear that.
Exactly. It's Joey Bosa a couple years ago. So not to take anything away from him, because Chase is going to be a stud at the next level, very like a Khalil Mack or Julius Peppers type of player. So I think, you know, the rest would be very happy, you know, picking him at 2. But, you know, with this team, with so many needs, I think it's something you definitely could consider trading down. If you can get, you know, a reverse RG3, I think that would be, you know, ideal. You have to get a lot to consider moving off that number 2 pick, whether it be 3 ones or 2 ones and a 2, or, you know, even more, or a player. So you need a lot of capital if you want to move out. But like I said, I don't think fans should be upset if they move out. I don't think fans should be upset if they take Chase. I think it's a win-win scenario for the team, but, you know, I think you can't go wrong. Like I said, if you get a guy like Okuda or Simmons at 5 and then a playmaker for DeWayne at 18 in some way, the team should be happy because they're going to get multiple, you know, good players. But, you know, do you outweigh that for a guy like Chase who, you know, seems like he's going to be a perennial Pro Bowler from day one? So,
right.
And you can go either way, happy.
So let's shift ahead now. Let's say they don't make the trade. They have no second round pick. So let's go to third and fourth round areas. And we both know they need to surround Dwayne Haskins with more talent. That means receiver and tight end. I'm going to start with there. So let's go first to the tight end class. And talking to somebody earlier today, they brought up the names of Devin Asiasi, Cole Kmet, Proutman from Dayton, Okwe Boonham from Missouri. How do you see that group? And like, would that be your top 4, or are there other guys you like better for the Redskins in those areas?
I like those guys. You know, I think Kmet probably will be gone, but he's not that good of a blocker. He needs to progress, definitely in that aspect, to be a full round, all around tight end in the league. Devin Asiasi, another good player. He came on late. He didn't really have that good of a year until this, a good career until this past year. He kind of blew up on the scene. And then Alberto from Missouri had a heck of a combine, you know, 4.4. And, you know, his film, and he makes plays that, you know, drop your jaw. And you're like, oh, this guy's going to be a great player in the NFL. But then the next play, he makes a bonehead mistake, and you don't know if you're watching the same player. So you like his potential, but he has the highest ceiling, I think, of any tight end prospect in this class. But, you know, he might have the highest floor as well. So you definitely there's some risk with him. Adam Troutman, I do like from Dayton. You know, with a guy like that playing in that type of competition, you want to see him dominate. And, you know, that's what he did. He had over 900 yards and 14 TDs this last year. He came into college as a quarterback, and so he's still kind of learning the position. But he's a willing blocker for a guy that was a quarterback, and he has nice athletic ability. And another guy that I like is Hunter Bryant from Washington.
Yeah.
I think he reminds me of Jordan Reed, and some fans might not, you know, be too happy about that. But, you know, Jordan Reed did have a great
– Jordan's talent was really good. It was never a question about that.
Oh, I agree. Wholeheartedly agree. And I think Hunter has some of that to his game, the way he shakes off defenders in his routes. Not as good, you know, not a great blocker like Jordan is. or was, but I think Hunter Bryant, you know, is definitely a guy that you'd be happy about as like a move tight end. He had over 800 yards and three TDs, you know, this past year at Washington. And lastly, you know, a guy that isn't talked about as much, I think, for being, you know, the John Mackey Award winner last year at FAU is Harrison Bryant. And, you know, he's a good blocker. He's 6'5". He's 250, you know, 5-ish area, but he has kind of a slender build. But he has a, you know, he's a really good receiver, had over 1,000 yards last year, can make plays at every level of the defense. And, you know, I really like his combo of being able to block, you know, and a receiver. So I think, you know, he's one of the most complete tight ends, if you want to go from that point of view, but maybe as a blocker and receiver in this 2020 class.
Let's go to the receiver group because, you know, again, they need somebody – they want somebody opposite Terry McLaurin, and they drafted a few guys. They have a couple of young guys from last year, Sims in the slot, you know, Harmon out at the Z, but they're going to try and get someone else. So, you know, I was talking to Matt Bowen last week on the podcast. It was Van Jefferson, Brian Edwards, Tyler Johnson. Those are some of the names he threw out there. Who are some of the guys that you like in the third or fourth round area that maybe could come in and make an impact for them?
You know, every year you watch the draft and you have those one or two guys that is sliding and you're like, how the heck is that possible? So I think that's going to happen to some receivers this year just because the class is so loaded. And, you know, two guys that I think, you know, could get there, I'm not saying they will, but they would be, you know, great dream scenarios for the Redskins would be either T. Higgins from Clemson, who's kind of fallen recently because he didn't have a combine workout and didn't have that great of a pro day showing before, you know, all the coronavirus stuff. But he, you know, has good film, has trouble beating the press, but I think if the Redskins get a guy like him, they'd be very happy. Another guy would be LaVisca Chenault from Colorado. You know, coming into this year, he was a top 10, top 10 projected pick. He had a down year this year because of injuries and other factors, but, you know, another guy, if the team gets him, they should be ecstatic because, you know, in 2018, he had 1,000 yards in just 9 games. And you can give him the ball multiple ways. You can play him as and running back. He's played a little quarterback, direct snap action in Colorado. So that'd be nice. But, you know, ideally, you know, a really good scenario would be, and he might even go a little higher, is Michael Pittman Jr. from USC. It's a guy I really like. His game reminds me of, not saying he will be as good as these guys, but like a Mike Evans, Kenny Galladay type. You know, he just made plays for USC last year. Over 100 catches, 11 TDs. I ran a 4.5 with a combine, which is, I think is great for a 6.4 guy. Has the bloodlines. His dad was a running back for the Buccaneers and Cardinals. And, you know, I think, you know, he just gets open and he uses the physicality to get open. And, you know, going back to Ron's days in Carolina, he always had that huge wide receiver, whether it be Kelvin Benjamin or Devin Funchess. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if he's looking for a guy like that, you know, coming into this year. And I think Michael Pittman Jr. would, you know, fit that to a T. And, you know, I think lastly, you know, some guys look in the fourth round, like Matt Bowen said, like a Tyler Johnson. Other guys were on those lines, but another guy like going in that big receiver mold would be Antonio Gandy-Golden from Liberty.
Right.
And another guy with, you know, lower competition, but he dominated, you know, nearly 1,400 yards and 10 TDs and 10 TDs in 2018 as well. So great catch radius, absolute beast after the catch, running over guys, stiff arming guys. It looked like children when he's when he has the ball in his hands. And, you know, again, not saying he will be this caliber player, but, you know, watching some of that film, he looks a little bit like Megatron and Calvin Johnson type of plays he was making this past year. So another guy, you know, maybe a normal draft would be second or third rounder, but because this class is so stacked, I think he could easily go to the fourth round and, you know, be an impact player for you. Maybe not right away because of the, you know, competition jump, but I think he'd be a solid player in the next 2 or 3 years.
And then again, surrounding the talent, they made some moves at running back in the offseason, you know, adding Peyton Barber and J.D. McKissic. And if Darius Geis and Bryce Love are healthy, this backfield looks a lot different. But I think there's always going to be questions with that. So that's another spot. Is there a running back in that group that you like? And then let's look at the tackle class after that.
Okay. Yeah, I think, you know, if they go in the third round, a guy I really like, a running back, would be Cam Akers from FSU.
Yeah, I like him.
Yeah, he's a beast, man. I think he got slept on these last couple of years because FSU has been down as a program. But, you know, he's a baller. I mean, he ran a 4.4 at the combine. He had over 1,100 yards rushing this year, 14 TDs. Solid out of the backfield with 30 catches this year. Definitely think he could be a feature back at the next level. I think it would be a worthy pick in the third round. You go a little later, you got a guy like Eno Benjamin from Arizona State. Another guy that I like a lot, you know, out of the backfield, had 77 catches over these last 2 years. I think the team is a guy that can do a little bit of both. And I think, Eno could be that guy. He had a solid last 2 years, almost 2,800 yards rushing over the last 2 years. So I think that'd be another guy the team could look at maybe in the fourth or fifth round if they're, still not sold on the health of Love and Geis, which would be warranted as the way they played. And, tackle-wise, you got a guy like Lucas Yang from TCU. Coming into the season, he was, being talked about as a first-round pick, but he had a little bit of a down year, didn't even play all 12 games due to injuries. And, I like his versatility. He can play left and the right side. And, you definitely love to have – Ron has talked about how much he loves versatility, so a guy like that would be good for the team. He's huge at 6'7", 330, but he plays pretty nimble for that size. I think at worst he could be a swing tackle, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's a starter at left or the right side here in 2021. And then, lastly, a guy that I like – a lot of people like him at guard more, but his name's Robert Hunt from Louisiana. Okay. And I could see him playing tackle, but, I know people want to move him to guard. But, he's solid in pass protection, but he's an absolute road grader in the run game. I tell you, he just mauls guys. So I think, be another guy for the team to consider. And, drafting the third or fourth round, you're not usually going to get a day one starter at tackle or a lot of positions. So I think if you get a guy like that, let a lower competition and have him develop, I think it would be a nice developmental pick for the team.
And then the last thing I want to ask you about is the big question, because I think a lot of people wonder, and this doesn't necessarily pertain to the Redskins, but it could affect them. Where do you think Tua goes?
Obviously that's a important question right now. I think talent wise him and Burrow were leaps and bounds ahead of guys like Herbert and Love and Fromm, but everyone knows the question with Tua is injury. And if it was just talent, like I said, I think he could, the rest of us might consider taking him at two. I think Tua is going to be a great player. If I'm the Dolphins, I'm taking him at five, and I might even trade up to three to get him, depending on the package the Lions would want. But I think the Dolphins are going to end up with him. I don't see him getting past a six to the Chargers, but, I guess crazy things that happen. It depends on those medicals. But if I'm the Dolphins, like I said, I'll make a reverse of that decision about 15 years ago of not signing Drew Brees and trading for Culpepper instead of based on the medicals. And maybe they make that wrong by drafting Tua and making him their franchise quarterback. Because if all goes right, he could be a top 10 quarterback in this league easily, in my opinion.
That's the risk. And I think that's what, is the risk here for Washington. But they've got a couple good choices up there, so I think they're going to end up okay whatever way they go. But, Tyler, listen, yep. I appreciate you joining me. And why don't you tell people where they find your work?
On Twitter, I am NFL Scout 21. And I'm also the mock draft expert for NBC Sports Washington. And I have another mock coming out Monday and next Thursday, the day of the draft.
Awesome. Tyler, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, man.
After this break, I'll be back with my guy in Miami, ESPN's Cameron Wolf. Which quarterback do the Dolphins really want? And does he think they'll trade up to get one? Welcome back. Now here's my conversation with ESPN's Cameron Wolf.
Now I'm joined from Miami. My ESPN colleague, Cameron Wolf, does a great job covering the Dolphins and all of South Florida sports. Had a terrific video on Twitter recently announcing their pregnancy. That was very cool, man. Very cool. And thanks a lot for doing this, Cameron. Want to start off, since you cover the Dolphins, and obviously there's a lot of interest up here in what might happen with the Redskins' second pick involving the Dolphins. How do you see the fifth pick right now with Miami? How do you see that going for them right now? Do you think they're going to keep it there, or do you think they're going to move up?
Well, first, I think it's going to be a quarterback. I would be very surprised if it's not a quarterback. The trade up and stay put conversation is very interesting. And I think, I always talk about this period as smokescreen season, because you see so many different reports about what it wants and who wants to trade up and who likes this player. And a lot of it's just noise. But I think a lot of it also serves a purpose to try to confuse other teams a lot about what their true intentions are. I think in a perfect world, the Dolphins would love to stay at number five and get their quarterback. the test will be is they're playing a cat and mouse game of whether a team from behind them will come up and trade them. I think the Dolphins don't believe that Washington or Detroit is really going to take a quarterback at 2 or 3. So right. Their worry is obviously somebody coming to leap them. And they're going to have to use their best investigative skills to figure out if the Chargers or another team is really going to come up for a quarterback or if their guy will fall to them to 5. So I think their preference is to stay. But if they hear noise that makes them feel like, hey, we've got to come up to 2 or 3, then I can see them making that move.
Which quarterback do you think they really favor? Because lately the trend has been, hey, Miami really likes Justin Herbert. And you never know, like, is that a smokescreen or what is that? So what is your take on which quarterback they would probably prefer?
Welcome to my life. I've been trying to figure that out the last week or two.
You'd have that for an answer, but I got to ask.
That's, I do wonder that a lot as well. You know, like I said, I do know it's smokescreen season, but that's a lot of smoke, you know, coming from a lot of different directions. So I do know that they do like Justin Herbert's skill set. They like his size. They like the fact that obviously he's healthy. Even though he's had a couple season-ending injuries in the past, he's more durable than Tua. But I know they have loved Tua for a long time.
Right.
And if he was healthy, this would not even be a conversation. They would trade up for Tua. They would do everything they needed. But he's not. And that's the reality. And I think the fact that the coronavirus is going on as a completely new element to this because they weren't able to get him in for a physical.
Right.
They weren't able to truly do everything they needed to do to cross their I's, you know, to cross their T's and dot their I's, you know. So I think if they take Tua, they're taking a leap of faith. They're really taking a chance. So I don't know if they're going to be willing to take that chance. I think that's what the conversation is. I think if they feel good about Tua's medicals and they're willing to take that chance, he's the guy. If they don't feel good about it, then Herbert's the guy. And the medical portion of it is something that I don't have a great sense of how they feel about it.
Well, I think that's the one thing I've heard up here, Cameron, and just even from talking to other people, that teams are going to be afraid of the durability question and the concerns, which, you know, and I think from a Redskins standpoint, I think what it means is, would they be as aggressive to move up to get him, to get them to move out? That's the question I have. How, you know, that I don't know that you can even answer that one too, but I think that's part of the discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's unlikely, in my opinion, that the Dolphins will be as aggressive, particularly if Tua's the guy, as they might have been if he was healthy. And I definitely think that they feel more comfortable taking him, not giving up those assets. So I think if I had to handicap it at this situation, I think they stay at 5 and take whoever's available. And I know Dolphins fans will be frustrated by that perspective because it's like, you know, you should have a preference. You know, you should have a Herbert or a Tua and be strong on that one way or the other. But the vibe I get is that, you know, either they're on the Herbert train or they're okay with either one. Right. And even if they prefer to, I think they're in a situation where they would rather have the plethora of picks and not give up, you know, maybe that number 26 pick or even, you know, that number 37 pick to go get the one they really want. So I get the feel, if I had to guess at this point, that they stay at 5 and take their chances either way.
And I think the other thing with it too, from a Redskins perspective, I think it would take a lot to get them off that pick. And that's where I say I think it would take their 5th and the 18th, maybe a 2nd or 3rd, and maybe a future pick. And I don't know. That's where I say, well, is the team really going to give up that much for Tua or even Justin Herbert?
Yeah.
I have a hard time seeing that too.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think they would give up that much for Joe Burrow if Cincinnati was willing to trade him. I don't see that happening. I know Washington obviously would want a ransom, you know, to give up the opportunity to draft Chase Young. They would need something that, you know, RG3 probably level ransom to get that. And I just don't see the Dolphins giving that up for, you know, an injured Tua or a Justin Herbert with question marks. I would be really shocked if that happened. I think Detroit, you know, if Detroit took a lower than standard offer, or even Washington took a lower than standard offer, then maybe that's a conversation. But I don't think that the Dolphins overpay for either of those two picks, you know, given the quarterbacks on the board.
Right, and I think that's why I thought too. I wondered about the 3rd pick because they may have to give up less. Detroit's not passing up the possible best player in the draft to do that.
Right.
You know, and so I think that's one of the things I've wondered about too. But what are Dolphins fans, what are they hoping for, you think?
Well, I guess on the Detroit perspective, what I've heard is Detroit really, really wants to get out of number three. Like, they've been putting out everything they can, you know, through reporters, through everything. And I just heard that, you know, I know they've talked a lot to teams about it, but I've heard that there's not as much capital for that pick as they want. So they're trying to increase the value of it. So I think that Detroit would love to get out of it, because whether their guy is, you know, Okuda or Isaiah Simmons or Derrick Brown, they probably can get that guy at five. Correct. So I think they would love to trade down. I just don't see Miami overpaying for either of those picks. Okay. As far as what Dolphins fans want, they want Tua. They've wanted Tua for over a year. Yeah. You know, the tank for Tua brigade was started by Dolphins fans, you know, right. Just based on the idea that they're going to pass. They made a decision, you know, last year that they were going to pass on the first round quarterbacks. They liked Kyler Murray, but once it became clear that he wasn't going to be available, they weren't going to take Dwayne Haskins. They passed on him. Obviously Washington took him, and then they took a flyer on Josh Rosen that hasn't worked out.
Right.
So I think that, you know, they're in a situation where they would love to see a franchise changing quarterback. They haven't had a Pro Bowl quarterback in 24 years. That's the longest streak in the NFL. They haven't had a franchise quarterback since Dan Marino retired in 2000, and they don't want to settle. And a lot of fans feel like Justin Herbert would be settling at quarterback. So, you know, GM Chris Greer talked to us, you know, a week before the draft this week and said that, you know, Dolphins fans should trust them. And I collectively felt Dolphins fans rolling their eyes. Like, why should we trust you? So, you know, we'll see. You know, obviously this is a virtual draft, so if Dolphins fans are unhappy with the pick, we won't get to see them booing. But I'm sure that the Dolphins will hear about that in the days and weeks to come if they draft someone they don't like.
I'm guessing Twitter would explode in South Florida if that's the case.
Yeah, absolutely.
last thing, Cameron, what do you think, what interest might Miami have in Trent Williams? And I ask that knowing, like, I still view Minnesota as a team to watch there, but every once in a while you hear the Dolphins, and we've chatted about this before, at least, you know,
right,
ever. What is their level of interest, do you think, in a guy like Trent?
Well, I think they like Trent. I think one thing about this team is they are in a rebuild, and they've really made it a priority to add guys they feel like are going to be in their core, guys who are in, you know, the 25 to 28 range is what they prioritized in free agency. They only have one player on their roster over 30, and it's Ryan Fitzpatrick, and he's not going to ever retire. So, you know, that he's immune to that sort of thing. So I think there would be an interest in Trent, but I don't think they would be one of the highest bidders. I think the interesting thing to talk about with the Dolphins would be, I think they're going to be very aggressive in trying to find offensive upgrades in this draft. But for whatever reason, if the board doesn't fall their way and they don't get an offensive tackle they feel good about early in the draft, that might present a situation where they have to, you know, go trade for a guy and maybe they get into the Trent market. But I think that would be a backup plan rather than something that they pursue up front.
Cool. So I guess to sum it up, you don't think they're going to be aggressive going up to get Tua at number two?
I don't think they're going to be aggressive going for Tua at number two. I think that they would love to stay at five. I wouldn't be shocked to see them trade up for three, but I don't think it'll be the ransom, you know, that everybody thinks it's going to be. I think it would be something very modest if they do trade up. But I think their preference is to stay at number five. And whether it's Tua or whether it's Herbert, I think they try to stay and get their guy. And another thing, I wouldn't be shocked if the Chargers actually pass on the quarterback.
Right.
I know a lot of people have been putting them at a quarterback because nobody's really a believer in Tyrod Taylor.
Right.
But I've heard that Anthony Lynn, like, legitimately, like the same way the Jags legitimately think that Gardner Minshew might be the guy, I think Anthony Lynn thinks the same thing. So I wouldn't be surprised if they pass on a quarterback, which may make Miami think that, why do we have to trade up? Who are we competing against? And if they had that perspective, then there's no need for them to trade up.
I think that's a good point too. And I think that's been the word with Anthony Lynn. And I mean, shoot, Tyrod had a pretty good year in Buffalo. And I think, you know, you with that defense out there, he might be a pretty good guy to pair with what they have out there. So something else to watch, man. Hey, Cameron, thanks a lot. I appreciate the insight. Very good. And, you know, people should follow Cameron on Twitter throughout this process, because you're going to get what Miami's going to do from him. So, Cameron, thanks a lot.
Thanks, John. Have a good one.
That's all for this week. I appreciate your patience during this trying time. I hope everyone is staying sane. Got to admit, I have days where I don't think I do. This is not fun for anyone, and if you're going through a tough time, I hope this podcast can provide a few minutes of respite and a few nuggets of information to help you get through the day. Anyway, thank you to Randy Mueller, Tyler Roman, and Cameron Wolf for joining me. And mostly, thank you for listening. I'll talk to you sometime during the NFL draft. Thank you and stay safe.